Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Viewing Angles, the only movie podcast. I'm your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me as always...
It's the B-host, Robert Meckie. It's been a while. Glad to see you're all tuning in. We're
exactly.
Still alive, rolling into 2020 strong.
The new decade is here, and, you know, we're just the same old boys seeing the same old movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got some good stuff this show. We'll be talking about Uncut Gems, the Adam Sandler Safdie Brothers film that came out a few weeks ago. And finally, the final word on Rise of Skywalker.
Yep, the definitive word from the only movie podcast.
Exactly. What do you call three trilogies? A trilogy?
It's a trilogy of trilogies.
A trilogy of trilogy. The end of a trilogy of trilogies. Wow, what a mouthful.
Oh, yeah, just like The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, that's, boy, howdy is it. You'll get the JJ cut right here in a few minutes. But first, let's talk about the box office. We haven't talked about it in a hot sec, but guess what? Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, is still in first with $34 million. It's doing okay. I think it's been under all the other ones so far.
Yeah, it's the weakest performer of the trilogy, which is, you know, kind of the exact opposite of what we saw with Endgame.
Yeah, definitely.
I think word of mouth has to be doing some damage to this one's performance.
So what do we think? Do we think this is like Star Wars fatigue? Do we think it's
it's a bad ratings? Movie. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I do think that there's a small portion of the audience that is just refusing to see any Star Wars shit after The Last Jedi because they just got so mad at that film.
Yeah.
But I do think a majority of it is people are not seeing this movie multiple times.
And I think
that the critical reception, like, you know, because they let the Rotten Tomatoes score and the Metascore out a couple days before this movie launched, as they usually do with Star Wars films. But I think, to most people's surprise, it is the lowest scoring critically the lowest scoring Star Wars movie of the Skywalker saga of all nine films.
Yeah. But what's the what's the cinema score, though?
B+, which is also the lowest of any Star Wars film, I believe.
Which is not bad.
B+
is still not bad, right?
It's not bad if we were looking at like the American grading system, but B+ is the same cinema score that Suicide Squad got.
Oh, interesting.
Yep, yep.
And 21 Bridges, actually.
And 21 Bridges, forgot about that movie.
Yeah, Doctor Sleep also got a B+. Charlie's Angels also got a B+.
Damn, Batman vs Superman got a B+.
Okay, so B+ is actually bad.
Yes,
you know, that's very interesting. Now, how does this CinemaScore? CinemaScore is the industry leader in measuring movie appeal among theater audiences. Since 1978, CinemaScore has been polling at major movie releases on opening night to collect demographic information and calculate a distinctive CinemaScore grade.
I do think that this is actually more reliable than like the Rotten Tomatoes audience score, because that can be manipulated so easily, as we saw with The Last Jedi.
Right.
But, you know, Last Jedi has an A cinema score, which I think is significantly more indicative of how a general audience feels about that movie. So did The Force Awakens. I think The Force Awakens either got an A or an A+.
Yeah. Here, I can actually read them off. Rogue One, A. Solo,
nice.
A Star Wars Story, A-, which is, oh boy. The Phantom Menace, A-. Attack of the Clones, A-. Revenge of the Sith, A-. The Force Awakens, A. Last Jedi, A. Rise of Skywalker, B+.
Yeah.
So
Rise of Skywalker is a bad movie.
Yeah.
That's the point we're trying to make here. And the audience backs us up.
Yeah. People seem to be comparing it less favorably to the rest of the Skywalker trilogy of trilogies.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that a little bit more later. Number two on the list is Jumanji, The Next Level. Still doing strong at $26 million.
Yeah.
I think it crossed the billion mark. Did it?
I don't think it's crossed the billion mark yet, but I think it will. I know the first one crossed the billion mark.
Worldwide, 611 million. So that's a lot.
Okay. I think that this kind of seems to be, you know, mimicking the performance of the first Jumanji reboot. mm-hmm. where it was kind of a sleeper hit, you know, competed with Star Wars.
Right.
It never had number one. All right. Maybe it had number one of the box office opening weekend. But this movie, like these movies have legs.
They got legs for days. I'm excited. Yeah, I still haven't seen either of them. But maybe I'm more interested, I think.
I mean,
because they're probably going to keep making these, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is like the Fast and Furious franchise for board games now. But
thank God.
I would recommend watching the first one on Netflix. Like, it's totally inoffensive. Nothing remarkable about it, but nothing that bad either. I'm like, fine. If this is the movie that makes the money, I prefer this money-making franchise to something like Transformers.
Yeah, something that at least people care about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then actually Little Women comes in at number 3 with $13 million.
Yeah, surprising.
Yeah, so I think it's already made its entire budget back. It's made $60 million.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We don't really have the budget numbers yet, but
I'm assuming it's below $60 million. If they spent $60 million on a Little Women adaptation, I want to know what the fuck they're spending it on.
Yeah, it was all Bob Odenkirk's salary. I can only assume. But that's good for Sony. Sony's doing pretty well on this.
I'm excited to see. This was an A24 film for the longest time.
Oh yeah, just because it's Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, Greta Gerwig, Little Women. They spent all the money on the women shrinking technology. That's why the budget's so inflated.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way A24 has the rights to Little Women. I think that's mainly what it is.
I thought Little Women was public domain.
Is it? Actually, you're probably right.
Yeah, it's like a Victorian. Or not Victorian, but like early 1900s story, right?
You know, I don't know anything about Little Women.
I know nothing about Little Women, but shout out to women for performing so well at the box office.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm excited to see it. The budget is rumored to be $40 million.
That's still higher than I expected.
Yeah, so it looks like the book came out in two volumes between 1868 and 1869.
Oh, that's
so
gotta be
Victorian era, right? Isn't that?
I think so. Yeah.
Queen Victoria. Ever heard of her? Right. Yeah.
Totally.
Until 1901. That's the Victorian era.
Nailed it. But yeah, that's all scale. Public domain.
Oh, very cool. So
A24, you can make Little Women of your own. I'll direct it for you.
Yeah. Every studio can come out with their own Little Women as a
treat. I'll write the script. I'll write and direct it. I'll be your Greta Gerwig. I'm not going to read the source material. I'll just look at the title Little Women and kind of go from there.
Yeah, it's about sisters and friends, and it's going to be fun. I'm excited to see it. I it took me a little bit to realize when it was first announced. I was like, oh, great. She's going to make like a movie about a book that everyone hates, but no, people like this book.
Yeah, I thought,
for the longest time, thought it was something like The Scarlet Letter, where people just like, man, this sucks, we have to read in school, but no, people have a deep personal connection to this novel.
I mean, this was a book that people had to read in school that I'm sure plenty of people still hate, but like, you know, like The Great Gatsby, I still think is great. I had to read that in school, but I think that's a great book. I think that the book is way better than Baz Luhrmann's adaptation.
Yeah. Oh, man. What does a green light tell you? It tells me that the movie sucked.
Tells me you're okay to leave the theater now.
Yeah, exactly. The Great Gatsby. Perfect. So, yeah, that's the box office for the week. And now we'll get into the feature presentation, which we can talk about the fucking most intense movie of the year.
Yeah.
Uncut
Saving
Gems.
The best for last.
Oh, my goodness. This movie is a thrill ride. Rob, sum this movie up in a tweet.
Oh, boy. Adam Sandler keeps making bets and the audience keeps yelling at him not to.
That is a great explanation. This is a movie directed by the Safdie brothers. You might have seen Good Time starring Robert Pattinson a few years back. And these guys know how to make kinetic, fast-paced, adrenaline rush movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where the state, like, it is really just an examination of a man who doesn't know how to stop.
Yeah, it's because he keeps winning. It's like a feedback loop.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he keeps winning until he doesn't.
Until he doesn't, exactly.
Right. But
that's the movie.
this definitely takes into consideration, or, you know, it's in the pantheon of awful gambling movies like Bad Lieutenant, of just having one guy ruin his life over the course of 2 hours and just really like push the boundaries of human behavior. This guy does not. Howard is the character. Adam Sandler. Howie. He is a diamond dealer in the Diamond District in New York City, who has got a penchant for making bets with other people's money. He borrows money. He makes bets. He tries to fleece people out of their money. This is a guy who really does not care. Wins. This is how he wins. He doesn't have any other abilities other than knowing how to make a deal. It is like the equivalent of, we all have that friend who's got the get rich quick schemes.
Yes.
This is Howard to a T, except he's willing to step over anybody who gets in his way.
This is a character who, if he didn't fall into the diamond dealing business, he would be like one of the top Herbalife marketer, like Herbalife salespeople Vemma salespeople.
Yeah.
Although I kind of want to see that story too, like him in a multi-level marketing scheme.
He would be to the top like real fast. He would probably be like a bail bondsman or some other like a pawn shop guy.
Yeah. Can we just talk about Sandler's performance as Howie in this film? Because goddamn, it is so good. He's so charismatic. Like, everything we see this character do is repulsive and a bad decision, but I think Sandler sells it so well that like you want to root for him.
Like, he's harnessing that like Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore energy of just like, this guy.
Yeah, except now he's like a 50-year-old man.
Right, exactly. But he's taking that unhinged, kind of crazy yelling energy and just channeling it into this character.
I didn't resurface anything.
Yeah, it is. It's great. He is a sociopath, but you're rooting for him to win because he's making this entire tightrope act. And we all know what the stakes are. Mm-hmm. You know, it sets it up pretty quickly on like, this guy owes money to people, and then Kevin Garnett walks in. He's brought in by Lakeith Stanfield, who plays basically, his character is, he goes in and gets like high profile people to come into the jewelry store that Howard runs.
And the deal is that Howard sells his fake watches out of his store too, right? Like, that's the arrangement they have set up. So Lakeith, in exchange for having that storefront, will get people like Kevin Garnett or The Weeknd to come into the store.
And they will sell fake Rolexes and real Rolex boxes.
Yep.
So that's kind of the scheme they got going. But it kind of centers on, there is a gem that is uncut, LOL, that he gets from Africa, Howard. And he is trying to sell this thing to a few different people and using nefarious ways to get as much money as he can for this gem. And a big part of the story also hinges around the like 2012 NBA Finals.
Yeah. Surprise. Like, it was surprisingly critical. I did not know how much to expect of Kevin Garnett being in this movie. I know who's like shown pretty heavily in the trailers, but I didn't realize that, you know, that game was going to be a pivotal moment in that film.
Yeah, he's in the movie. He is like a full-fledged character in this movie. He plays a pivotal role.
Yeah.
And he looks, it's funny because they use like the footage from the game, and Kevin Garnett looks exactly the same.
Yes.
This is 7 years later and looks just like he's playing basketball in his prime.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if he got, like, do you think he just stayed in shape all those years, or do you think that he like did a training regimen to get?
No, I bet he stays in shape. Yeah,
yeah,
he's still pretty
athletic, lanky guy. Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know how to feel about. So, I don't follow sports at all. I don't know if you knew like the outcome of that game.
I did not.
But I wonder how it was, like, how people felt going into this movie that knew everything about that season and knew how it was all going to play out, because I think I actually preferred not knowing what was going to happen.
Me too. and especially with all the parlays and whatnot.
Yeah.
I think even at that level, it'd be hard to remember, like, oh, did he win the tip off? Like, mm-hmm. knowing the actual stats from the game, I think created a level of uncertainty even among people who knew the outcome of the game. Because there's a few, and they do a good job of explaining exactly what the sports betting is. When it's like, I'm going to parlay this, and and this.
I like they have that one character who, I forget his name, but he apparently is just like an actual sportscaster who plays the bookie.
He's an actual a former radio sports journalist.
Oh wow! One of my friend of the show, Jacob Douglas. You should listen to the Kids in College podcast. Mm-hmm. We were talking after we saw this movie together, and he was explaining about how that guy actually was renowned for not only his sports casting, but refusing to like ever swear on the air in public ever. He was laughing so hard when this guy was just saying like, that's the dumbest fucking bet I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought that just sounded like a line that a bookie would say. Hearing the context of this guy like refusing to ever cuss publicly made that a lot more entertaining.
Yeah. And they do have a moment with Julia Fox, who is one of the newcomers. Well, I think is pretty good in this.
Oh, yeah.
We got Julia Fox basically plays Howard's mistress and Idina Menzel in a very out of character performance, I guess. Very weird to see her in this movie. She plays Howard's wife.
Yeah.
Soon to be ex-wife.
Elsa herself plays Adam Sandler's wife.
Elsa, the Wicked Witch of the West.
The Wicked Witch of the Diamond District. I guess she was the Wicked Witch of the West in Wicked. Man, I forgot that she was doing things before Frozen.
She's got a lot of stuff going on. She's in Rent. Yeah. So she's also amazing in this, but doesn't get a whole lot of screen time. Julia Fox is kind of the breakout performance. And there's a moment when she is in the casino and she's made a bet and they have a guy kind of explaining what the bet is.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that guy is just some random sports gambler who they found like the day of, and like, hey, do you want to be in the scene?
I love that. That's just how they shoot. They're just like, I saw this at the Draft House, and they had the pre-show interview with the Safdie Bros, and they talked about how when they were shooting this film and shooting Good Time too, they don't close down any streets that they're shooting on. They try to keep it as real as possible. They talk about like the vibration of the scene and mm-hmm. just like the pulse of the city. Like, you really feel that in this movie. It is hectic. It feels like these are all real people walking through the streets of New York, even in the casinos. Like, I'm sure they shut down that part of the casino for filming, but everything else happening in the background, I think, was still a fully functioning casino.
Yeah.
I'm just like, the vibe that these movies get is so grounded that I think it only helps add to the tension. Like, the stakes feel that much more real because of how they shoot.
Yes, definitely. They're really great. I'm looking forward to whatever they do next. And the music is also amazing, too.
Yes.
It's
so synthy.
It's the same person who did Good Time. Mm-hmm. And he's got a name that I can't think of right now. It's not like it's like a band name. Daniel Lopatin also won 103 Point Never is the band name.
I like that. That's a good name.
Yeah, very cool. Very synthy. I'm a big fan of this guy, and I hope that their collaborations continue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think really great kinetic movie. Not for the faint of heart. If you're into intense movies that will make you stressed out, this is a good movie to see.
Yeah. If you have a heart condition already, maybe steer away from this or watch it at home with your medication in hand.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend going out to see this movie while it's still in theaters. Get it while it's hot.
Yeah,
this is one of the best movies of the year, and it's one of the best most well made. And it's also just different. It's different than so many other movies that you're going to see this year, especially normal awards fare.
Oh,
that's kind of maybe a little bit more blasé, a little bit slower.
Yeah, you can tell this movie deserves awards, but it's not going for awards. Like, this movie doesn't feel like bait at all. This is just a Safdie Bros film, and this is what they like to make. This is definitely their art in its purest form. Also, if you're an Adam Sandler fan, you should go see this movie too, because you should get out of your fucking comfort zone. See a good Adam Sandler movie for once in your life.
Yeah, and it is funny. This movie is actually very funny as well.
Oh, yeah. And again, he gives a great performance. He still has that comedic, manic energy, just in a very different setting from, like, you know, Grown Ups or Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is one of the rare movies that really functions well on, like, a flick and a film playing ground.
Yeah.
Would highly recommend this to anyone that I know.
Yeah. Easy watch. There's not a lot of, like, there's no barrier to entry. This is not a high concept film. It's just good.
Yeah. Speaking of high concept, let's move into the Piece de la Resistance.
Oh boy.
The film event of the year. The end of a saga.
40 years in the making.
Yeah. It is Star Wars Episode 9. The Rise of Skywalker. Wow. So it's been a couple of years since The Last Jedi. The divisive question mark second entry in the third trilogy of, oh my god, this just makes my head hurt. I'm so glad we're done. I'm so glad we, like,
but we're not, you know,
exactly. This is Kathleen Kennedy looking me in the eyes and saying, this is how I win. I am just glad that we can finally take apart, hopefully, we don't have to watch another movie and debate about its relevance to the original Star Wars trilogy.
Yes.
Hopefully we can just move in different directions now and just really fill out the Star Wars universe and not talk about this saga of movies ever again.
That's true. I do hope that nobody touches the Skywalker bloodline ever again. Like, this universe is massive. There's so much more you could do with it.
Right. So we are going to have full spoilers on this review. We're going to be talking in depth about this. So if you haven't seen it yet, pause, go see it. Or don't. You know, yeah exactly.
Because, exactly. I mean, if you don't want to be spoiled, you don't want to listen to this, just pretend The Last Jedi is where the Skywalker saga ended. Because that's honestly the best ending we could get out of the sequel trilogy.
Yeah. So, without further ado, let's get into The Rise of Skywalker. The Rise of Skywalker is the story of Rey, Finn, Poe, and Chewie, and other assorted people as they go on their journey. But the plot of this movie is that the Emperor is back. Yep. And that sounds like an oversimplification, but that's literally the first line of the crawl.
The dead speak.
Emperor Palpatine is back, and he's been behind everything the whole time.
Also, he fucks.
Yeah, also he fucks. He wants Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren basically tracks down the Emperor because he is afraid. He doesn't want anyone to threaten his power. Because he's the leader, he's the supreme ruler of the First Order, and Palpatine has sent a broadcast into space basically saying, I am Emperor Palpatine, I'm back, so bow before me. So Kylo Ren goes to find Palpatine by tracking down these emitters, these MacGuffins, basically, to find out where the Emperor is, and then he goes to find the Emperor. And the Emperor has been brought back to life somehow. It's never answered exactly how he got back, but there are some Sith acolytes, some sorcerers who we assume brought him back to life. We actually don't even really know.
How the fuck did all those people even get there? Yeah, we don't know if he's dead. We don't know, like, all right, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but on that Sith planet in the Colosseum, Exegol, there's like a shit ton of hooded people in the stadium seating.
Correct.
I thought that was just a vision that Rey was having of, like, no. Oh, this is, yeah. And as soon as I was like, oh, those are real people, that only made it worse. I'm like, how the fuck, how is any of this happening?
That's a good question. And maybe we'll find out through our discussion. Mm. So Palpatine is back and Kylo Ren goes to basically kill him. And then the Emperor says, bring Rey to me.
No, he says, kill Rey.
Kill Rey. Yeah. And then I'll show you how to be the biggest badass like ever.
Yeah.
So that's happening on one end. On the other end, you've got Rey is training under the tutelage of Princess Leia, who is taking up her Jedi training in lieu of Luke Skywalker, who perished at the end of The Last Jedi. And she's doing some obstacle courses, fun. They use unused footage of Carrie Fisher in these scenes, and it's pretty obvious that they've written dialogue kind of around a few canned responses.
What they had.
Yeah.
For B-roll over. Yeah.
I can't really fault them for using this approach. I think the way they handle, she dies in the movie, and I think the way they handle that is interesting and
bad.
I'll just say it. I think the framing of the shots is kind of cool. But when you realize that like this has all been set up because she's already like dead,
yeah,
it just makes it feel very wooden. And there's a whole section of the plot that revolves around cutting back to her and a few other characters,
yep,
where they can't really interact because they have to focus around her and she has to say a few different canned things, and it's clunky and does not work very well.
Yeah, honestly, they should have just like they could have had her die off screen, just pass away off screen, focused on telling the story that you wanted to tell, and not dealt with the weird bullshit that we ended up getting. And also, when she does eventually pass in this movie, I kind of hated it. Like, so you killed Leia off so she could make a long distance phone call and say one word to her son that somehow turns him to the good side.
Well, no, yeah, to distract him long enough for Rey to murder him.
Yeah. Which then turns him to the good side. Yeah.
Gotcha. Slippery hands, Kylo.
Oh, God. There's so much to dissect in this film.
Yeah.
Where do we start?
We're going to try and go chronologically. So it opens up with Finn and Poe and Chewie getting some intelligence from a spy deep in the First Order. And the intelligence basically says that Palpatine is back and he's raised like 50 Star Destroyers.
Because, of course,
we don't really know where these Star Destroyers come from. They come from underground.
Yeah.
He lifts them out of the ground. He lifts like 50 of them. So he's strong with the Force.
Does he lift them? I thought they just turned on.
No, I think he lifted them. I mean, it's unclear. I saw the movie 3 times, so that's what I thought happened. But,
yeah.
You know, who's to say? I feel like I saw it 3 times and I understand it the same amount as when I first saw it. Jesus Christ. So
this movie, they come back and say
Palpatine is back. We got it. We got to find the other transmitter so we can find out where the Emperor is and kill him. Rey has got it in her Jedi books.
My favorite part of this movie was that scene when Oscar Isaac is like, somehow Palpatine is back. And you can like see him rolling his eyes as he delivers the line. Just somehow.
Yeah, somehow Palpatine is back. And nobody is like, how could this possibly happen? They're all like, yeah, all right.
Yeah,
whatever. Get it.
Yeah,
yeah. New mission happens. We got to kill both of them now. So very, very fun.
We got to find a MacGuffin to find another MacGuffin to go find the Emperor.
Exactly. So Rey and Finn and Poe all travel to a desert planet.
Oh, wait, we forgot about the spy in the First Order.
No, that's what I said. That's how they got the information that Palpatine is alive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you just said they somehow got the information.
Right, yeah. The spy gave it to another spy who then gave it to them.
Yeah.
And the second spy is quickly executed by the First Order. And they're like, all right, we got a spy. And they're like, who could it be? Oh, boy. And then So Rey, Finn, and Poe, and Chewie all go to this desert planet where there's a festival happening, and they meet up with Lando, who says, hey, we're actually looking for the thing that's going to lead you to Emperor Palpatine. So we knew he was alive the whole time, I guess. And the last time we were tracking down this one guy, his ship's still in the desert. Go find it. They go find it. And they get trapped underneath some sand, and they introduce us to a force healing power with a there's a worm who's in there. She heals the worm. That's cool. I like that there's a force healing power. That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm like, sure, whatever.
Yeah, new force powers are cool. I'll say it first.
Yeah, I do think there is some issue with this being like it's kind of the Kingsman problem where it's like, oh, so nobody's actually in like danger of dying anymore.
Right. Exactly. And then they also find a dagger that has Sith script on it that C-3PO can read, but he can't translate because of Senate protocols. But the thing is, he was built by Anakin.
Yeah.
In the Outer Rim. So why does he have to follow? Yeah. Why does he have to follow these protocols?
For the plot, because we needed an emotional moment with Anthony Daniels.
Yeah. So
although even that sacrificed by 3PO,
that's retconned immediately.
That's rectified immediately. There's no consequence to doing that, to having that, dedicating all that time to saying like, I just want to take one last look at my friends.
And it's like, don't worry, you'll remember your friends in like an hour.
Yeah.
Jeez. So they get the dagger and they have to go to a different place to get that translated. But meanwhile, Kylo Ren, using the Force connection that they have, has figured out where they are by taking an item from Rey, taking a necklace from Rey and having it analyzed. They figure out where they are. They go with the Knights of Ren to this planet to track them down. And the Knights of Ren, I guess the Stormtroopers quickly find them and they capture Chewie, and Rey can sense that Kylo Ren is flying towards them miles away, but cannot tell that there's Stormtroopers like right around the corner that have taken her friend hostage. And I guess Kylo was just like, yeah, just send the Stormtroopers like to where they are and then I'll meet you there. So, you know, Rey destroys the ship. And then as the transport is taking off with Chewie and the dagger, Kylo and Rey are fighting for it. And then she uses force so hard that she lightnings the ship up.
I guess that's just how that works. Like,
yeah. So Chewie's dead. And that was honestly the first time in the movie when I'm like, they're going for it. This is the movie. Yeah. This is like
that gave me a little bit of hope. I'm like, oh, maybe something bold will happen in this film. Yes.
But if you're so upset from that moment that you're like, I need to go to the bathroom and like catch my breath. By the time you get back, Chewie's back alive.
Yes. They don't dwell on like J.J. Abrams is so fucking afraid to have like a single emotional moment in any of his films. Yeah. Also, just the whole fake out was bullshit. The fact that like we only saw one thing, like if they had set up the possibility of Chewie being on another ship early on, I'm like, OK, that's a fake out I buy. But
right.
Because we only saw the one ship land, the Stormtroopers put Chewie in the one ship, and then that one ship take off. It just feels like they're lying to us when it explodes.
Yeah.
And then they reveal like, oh, by the way, there was another ship that you guys didn't see that Chewie was actually on.
Right. It just sets up that at any time in this movie, if somebody dies, don't freak out because we'll bring them back. And spoiler alert, that happens two more times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus
Christ.
It already
happened in the opening crawl.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they brought back somebody. Yeah, no one ever really dies.
Yeah. But let the past die. J.J. Abrams not having it. Yeah, he's not having any of the themes of The Last Jedi.
Right. Let the past live. Bring it back to life if you have to.
Yeah. Imagine how good that Chewie moment, even if Chewie didn't die at the end, how good it would have been to like have Rey actually feel bad for killing Chewie and then not learning that he's still alive until she like saw him on the ship again. Like, yeah. I would be like, people would be fucking clapping. They'd be like, oh, fuck yeah, Chewie's still alive. Like, Rey had like, you know, she feels better about herself. You had that emotional moment. You had that downtime. But This movie is so concerned with propelling itself forward at every second.
Yes. That they're. So then they got to get. They got to translate the script, and to do that, there is only one way, and they gotta take him to a guy who can extract his memory, but it'll delete his memory in the process. So they go and do that.
God.
And
the only good character from the movie,
Babu frickin' Frick. He is the best character. Oh, he's so fun. He speaks a weird language, and he's tiny.
Yay!
There is a hilarious moment where they have got 3PO in the position to like get his brain like zapped, and they're all like, "Is you know, there's got to be another way." And Rey actually says, "Like, you know the odds better than anyone.
Yeah,
can you tell us?" And I'm like, "Okay, this is actually heartfelt." And he's like, "All right, let me take one last look at my friends." And then the little robot's like sad, and we're like, "Oh great, jeez, let us have one moment." And then as they're about to zap his mind, he's like, wait, there's another. And then they zap his brain.
Yeah.
And I laugh every time. C-3PO
fucking dies.
Yeah.
Droid is ready.
Yeah. And then he translates it. But Kylo Ren is quickly on the tail. And they go and, you know, fuck up that planet, too.
Also, we didn't even mention Poe's old fling, like the bounty hunter on whatever fucking planet they're on now.
Right. Kijimi.
Kijimi.
Yeah. I forget Kerry Russell plays a Zori who is kind of like. Yeah. Like
she's
Zed.
She's like a sexy Boba Fett.
Right. It's like the assassin from Attack of the Clones. Pretty much dressed very similarly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's tall and attractive, but you only see her eyes. And then she's been saving up to get like a transmitter her entire time to get off this planet and escape like the bondage of the Empire. And then as they're leaving, she gives it to Poe. It's just like, hey, just take this. It's like, why? It's like, because you're gonna need this to get to the next plot point.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, all right, sure. So they go up and they sneak onto the Star Destroyer, figure out Chewie's alive. That's great. They rescue him. And then Rey has got to go and find the other tracking beacon to get to Exegol.
Yep. That's the Sith compass.
Or no, she's got to get the dagger because.
Oh, right.
And they're like, why do we need the dagger?
Yeah.
Like, and already... she's like, I just feel it in my balls. Like,
yeah. Where my force is stored. But oh my God, like that was so fucking stupid. Why we are like, that's why they went to get C-3PO translated, right?
Right.
Why were the instructions on the dagger to begin with? Like, I don't think we've even touched that.
No. Yeah. Why were they? Yeah. First of all, why do the Sith need a dagger? Second of all, why is it written in the Sith language that hasn't really been brought up until right now?
Yeah. Why did this dude have the dagger?
Yeah, and why does the dagger lead them to a planet in the Endor system from Return of the Jedi? So this dagger's been made in the last, like, 20 years.
Yeah, this is a recent dagger, because when they get to the Death Star, like, if you look at it from whatever this fucking beach was that they're on, and you pull the tab on the dagger, it reveals, like, a diagram of the Death Star ruins, and then, like, a fucking arrow pointing to where the compass is.
That matches up like so just so happens where they're exactly standing. Like it's a perspective thing and it matches up with the ruins.
Yeah.
So someone's gone through a lot of trouble to like make this very specific.
Yeah. Why not? Like, if you're going to do that, why not just get the fucking dagger and put it somewhere secure? Like,
yeah. Why even have the dagger? Like, if you're the one who knows where it is, then why make the dagger to lead somebody there?
Yeah.
And how do you know that? Like, time won't have decayed the Death Star, so the silhouette doesn't match up exactly.
Yeah, and like, if the compass is this important to the Sith, which apparently it is, just secure it. Like, why leave it in the ruins of the Death Star on the planet in an ocean where...
Yeah, go instead of making the dagger, go get it and then put it in the water. Like, put it anywhere. Like, anywhere that the dagger leads to.
Yeah,
like...
This movie's getting worse the more we talk about it. Like, it makes,
I've been thinking about this for
no
a while.
Fucking
yeah.
sense.
None. Yeah, no part of this movie makes any sense. If you try and like retrace the steps of this movie, starting at the end and going like, how does each action lead to each event? Mm-hmm. You're gonna be scratching your head. This is gonna be super confusing. It's complete nonsense.
Yeah.
So they go there. Finn meets another stormtrooper, which is actually kind of cool. I like, she's like, oh, yeah. We're like, everyone who lives here is like, yeah. We're all stormtroopers who like refuse to kill civilians.
Oh, wait, we got to talk about how Domhnall Gleeson got fucking boned in this film.
Oh, yeah. Donald Gleeson is the spy, which is also the funniest, one of the funny
it's
parts
funny,
of the movie.
But it's also, it's another one of the stupidest fucking things in the movie where it's like, Abrams just wanted a gotcha moment. Like, if he was actually the spy and he has this whole thing about, I don't care if the resistance wins, I just want Kylo Ren to lose. It's like, if that was the case, why wouldn't you just let why wouldn't you let Finn and Poe just fucking die and continue being a spy?
Yes. Or why wouldn't you try and murder Kylo Ren?
Yeah. like, this dude who, like, he takes two bullets for Finn and Poe, who have killed countless numbers of his men.
Yeah.
I hate this movie. This movie's so fucking bad.
So he's a spy. It's hilarious. He's like, I'm the spy.
Yeah.
Which is great. And then they get off and Kylo Ren reveals that Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter.
Yeah. Remember everything I said in The Last Jedi? I lied.
Yeah.
You're actually a Palpatine.
Yeah, they were nobody. They chose to be nobody. Sure, whatever.
And he's so like, I never lied to you. I would never lie to you. It's like, so were you lying about them selling you for drinking money? Did they actually just?
It sounds like they lied. He lied about that.
Yep.
So they lied. They sold you to protect you, which, you know, if you're gonna save your daughter, might as well sell her into slavery, right? There can't be any other way.
Nothing safer than that.
Yeah, nothing safer. Yeah, nobody's been safer than slaves throughout like the dawn of fucking time. Jesus.
Perfect
this
plan.
Raises a few questions. But it's very obvious in the flashback that the son of Palpatine is like 30 max. Like,
yes.
So he and Rey was born after. So this guy was born from Palpatine and another lady while Palpatine was the Emperor.
Yes.
So when he was all gross looking.
Because there are 30 years between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens.
Correct.
So this dude, like, Palpatine fucked right before he got thrown into the chamber by Vader.
Yes. And nobody ever knew about it.
Nope. Except nobody. The dude that had the Sith dagger with the directions to the Sith compass on it.
Right. Yeah. So this was all set in motion by somebody. who the fuck knows? God, this is so convoluted. It doesn't make any sense. And so that guy decided that he didn't want to be Palpatine's son because he's dead. I don't know. Like, Palpatine's acolytes came to like get the Palpatine granddaughter instead of the son for some reason. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. None whatsoever.
Yeah. So basically, Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter. Cool. And that's why Palpatine wants her to die, because
but
maybe
actually
he saw,
not really.
Right. Actually, he was a big bamboozle the whole time.
Oh, God. OK, so we found out where are we in this fucking train wreck of a film? Finn meets another stormtrooper, an ex-stormtrooper.
Finn meets another stormtrooper. Her name is Janna. That's great. I love how they just kind of section off like all the characters of color and just like, here, you have a playmate too.
Yes,
like,
yeah,
great. So much fun. And Rey basically goes in by herself to the Death Star and finds the secret compartment, but meets like a Sith version of herself, like that has shark teeth, and tries to kill her, and then but also is not there, and then Kylo Ren is there.
For somehow. Real. That's not the, that projection. He's just actually there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Which I didn't realize like until they started like fighting.
Me too. Like, I was like, oh, he's just projecting again.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he found the thing, and then he destroyed it. He's like, you're only getting to Exegol with me, and he destroys the beacon. And then cue the fight. So they fight, and this is actually one of the cooler parts of the movie. They're fighting. Rey is having this big personal battle, and then Leia reaches out with the Force in the time of need and just says, Ben. And then he's like, what? Who said that? And then while he's not paying attention, Rey guts him.
Yes.
Stabs him
with
right.
With his own saber.
With his own saber, right in the kidneys. He's done for sure. And then Rey has realized that she has become the thing that she hates and heals a war criminal of his wounds and then takes his ship and leaves him stranded. and then she goes to whatever planet Luke was on, to the island. Octo. And starts. She torches the ship and tries to throw her lightsaber away, and Luke catches it. And he's like, nah, you know. I've learned my lesson. Like, don't do this. We knew that you were a Palpatine the whole time. Because they knew. I don't know why they knew. And they didn't tell anybody. Like, so Leia knew that Rey was a Palpatine.
Yeah. Everyone knew from the get-go, apparently.
Yeah. So does that mean that they knew Palpatine was still alive? Or would be trying to get her?
Dude.
Did they know that Snoke was Palpatine the whole time?
You can't ask these questions. JJ's telling you to shut the fuck up and just watch the movie right now.
Right, yeah. And then there's a weird flashback scene where Luke is remembering, like, yeah, it was like the last day of Leia's training. And she had a vision that her son would, like, die.
Yeah.
And if she continues to train. Her lightsaber.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end of her Jedi training, like, her son would die. So she gave up her lightsaber for some reason. It's like, hey, Luke, check this. I'm not going to be a Jedi. So he's like, yeah, sure. That makes sense. Yeah. And so he's like, hey, here's Leia's lightsaber. Take that and go kill the Emperor. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on.
Just fucking do
Come
it.
Come on.
We know
Come
you
on.
Want to.
Yeah. So... she goes that way. Poe and Finn and Chewie come back to the Rebel stuff, and they're like, oh, man, this is bad, right? We gotta help Rey. And they're like, great. And then Lando's like, I'll go assemble an army. They're like, but we tried that literally one movie ago, and it didn't work. And Lando's like, but I'm Lando.
Yeah.
I'll be able to do it. And they're like, sure, try it. We'll meet up. So... so they go. Rey goes to Exegol and gets to the Emperor, and so do Poe and Finn. They all go. They have this dumb plan. That the plan is that the Death Stars, which can destroy planets, they can't leave the atmosphere without this communications tower.
Yeah. For whatever reason.
Right. Because they can't tell. They say specifically in the movie, like, out there in Exegol, you can't tell which way is up. So they need, like, a communications tower. So they're going to blow up the communications tower so that none of the ships can leave. But Ha, as soon as they see that the communications tower is under attack, they switch the beacon to the ship that doesn't know what is what. So...
Big brain chess moves, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why don't we just lift off instead? God, this movie's dumb.
They bring horses.
They bring horses. Yeah, space horses with their space forces.
Yep.
And that's a whole thing. Who cares? Honestly, I'm not like what. And so they land on the Star Destroyer, and. Nobody in the Star Destroyer has a thought of, like, let's just, like, rotate, like, a little bit. Like let's, like...
Yeah, we can do that. We have that technology, but they're like, nah.
Yeah, we can slightly tilt.
A little bit.
And just, like, everybody put your seatbelts on. We'll tilt and kill all of the Rebels.
Yeah.
So they don't do that. They just kind of sit there.
Yeah.
And Finn's Force sensitive. Sure. Who cares?
Yeah, they say he's, like... Well, here's the thing. It's never confirmed in the movie, but he is. Because... we have, you know, post-release interviews from the screenwriter and director now saying that Finn is force sensitive. And I guess we just have to accept it now with no proof.
Yeah. Yeah. So sure, why not? That's fun, I guess. The meat and potatoes here is Rey goes to face the Emperor, and
the Emperor, like, I'm gonna kill you. His grand plan.
Yeah, you killed my parents, so I'm gonna kill you. And Palpatine's like, fair, yeah, sure. Kill me. That's actually why I brought you here. I wanted you to kill me the whole time. This is some like triple like reverse psychology.
Yeah.
If you kill me, my essence will go into you. That's how it works. Remember from all the other movies? Everyone in the theater's like, no. What?
Yeah.
But at this point, I'm like, sure.
The idea that Palpatine is just pulling all of this out of his ass because he doesn't know what to say. He's like, all right, how do I stay alive? Like,
yeah.
I will go into you if you kill me. So kill me. I am all the Sith, LMAO.
Yeah, I am all the for sure. We forgot when Rey heals Kylo after she murders him, saves him, and then he sees Han as a memory.
Mm-hmm. And not Han's a force like, ghost.
Not a force ghost. He's just a memory. And Han's like, hey, you can be good, you know? And he's like, are you sure? And they mirror the scene of Han's murder from the first one.
Yeah.
Except this time he throws his bad lightsaber away and he's like, I'm going to be good now.
And is like, how the fuck am I going to get to Exegol now?
Yeah. So somehow he gets a TIE fighter, which they never explain.
Somehow Palpatine is back.
Yeah. Somehow all of this is happening. That's like, somehow this happened. That is like the sentence that I'm sure is written in the script a lot of times.
Yeah.
Somehow this happened.
And then this.
And then this happens.
This is actually like the one part of the movie that I thought was well done, was that scene between Han and Kylo. And what really got me was that scene at the very end when, you know, Han is like, I still love you. You know, you're my son. And Kylo, like, he wants to say, I love you. Like, he's about to say it. And then Han just says, I know. And it just ends. I'm like, okay, that was good. Like, that's how you do a callback to the original trilogy and have it emotionally resonate.
Yeah. Dad. I know.
God, that was good. That was legitimately a great part of this film that I otherwise did not have a good time watching.
Yeah, it was a banger. So then Kylo goes to Exegol, gets through all of the defenses. Sure. Palpatine can't sense him, maybe.
Yeah.
And then he also doesn't say anything. Yeah, for the rest of the movie.
The last line of Kylo Ren is ow.
Ow. When he jumps from one point to another. you know how Jedi do.
Yeah.
And then so Rey is about to face off with Palpatine, and then Rey can feel Kylo there. And she's like, yeah, you think you got this? And then she as the Knights of Ren are beating the snot out of Kylo, she does a cool thing. She gives him the lightsaber through like their force connection.
Yeah.
Which was one of the cooler movies.
I do like when he pulls it out and like he just stares at the Knights of Ren and he just like shrugs his shoulders.
Yeah, like, he does the Han Solo shrug. Yeah. He does and then murders them all and then meets up with Rey. And they face off, and he's like, actually, this was also a part of the plan.
Yeah.
And then sucks their spirit out.
Oh, my God. I'm going to steal your life force and put it in me.
Exactly. So he does that. And then Kylo gets up, and the Palpatine just, like, force pushes him and that down a hole.
As I
once
fell.
Which is not a way
to
kill people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to kill myself in the theater right there.
Yeah. And then he force lightnings way up.
Oh yeah, third act skybeam. That's what Star Wars needed. That's what the franchise needed to continue moving on.
Give me that skybeam. I love it. And disables all of the ships.
Until he doesn't. And then
until
the ships.
Rey is suddenly like, be with me, be with me. And then all of the Jedi are like, Rey, we're all with you. Yeah. Like every voice that you've ever heard. Right.
They even got Hayden Christensen to come back to record lines for this.
Yeah. So it was fun. It was a fun little callback. She gets the second lightsaber and murks him. For some reason, You know, he was like, hey, if you kill me, my essence is going to be within you. And then she kills him and it doesn't happen. So LOL the whole time.
Yeah, so he was bullshitting out of his ass. Like
exactly. Yeah, gotcha. But is he really dead? How can we say for sure?
Yeah, he's going to come back.
Yeah. You know, no one ever really dies.
Also,
no one's ever really gone.
This movie really tried to pull off, like, beat for beat, some Endgame moments. Like,
oh, yeah.
It had the I am Iron Man scene, like, I am all the Sith, and she's just like, I am all the Jedi.
All the
like,
Jedi.
Fuck off. Everyone involved in this film, fuck off. And then they had the portal reveal from Endgame, where instead of all the Avengers coming back, it's the ships. And Lando's
it's Lando
like,
and everybody.
There are more of us, Poe. There are more of us. And it's just fucking every ship. And I'm just like, this is the most hollow reinforcement scene I've ever seen.
Right. Because they're like on Canto Bight, or Crate. When they call for help, nobody comes. And then they're just like, well, no, just like try harder. Like just. Like call harder. So basically, in an
Lando's
afternoon,
just like, oh, you were doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I'll show you how to do it. So in like the course of like one afternoon, Lando gets everybody in the galaxy to come. And fight.
Yep.
Sure.
Literally
I
one
guess.
Afternoon.
Dude's charismatic as fuck.
Billy Dee. Hard to say no.
Yeah. So then they fight back and they do it good. Wow. Wedge Antilles. Who cares about him? He gets literally 2 seconds. He's like, good to be back. Good to be flying, Lando. And it's like, who's that? Oh, it's Wedge.
Yeah.
The guy who didn't matter.
Yeah. Well, the worst. Oh, God. Okay. Now we get to talk about the fucking fan service of this movie and just how cringy it was. Like the scene with Chewie getting a medal at the very end.
Right, getting Leia's medal.
Yeah.
Because for some reason she had her medal just hanging around.
Yep. But it's like, why? This doesn't help anybody in the universe. Like, this is just for fans. Because only fucking Star Wars nerds are the ones to notice. Like, oh, well, Chewie didn't get a medal at the end of A New Hope. It's not like Chewie was waiting 40 fucking years to get this medal. Like,
yeah, he's like, you know what? Saving the universe is one thing, but getting a medal. I wanted that sick-ass gold medal. From wherever the fuck it was.
Yeah. Now that Luke and Han are dead, I'm the only one with the medal.
Yeah. I do love that there's a moment in the movie when Lando's like, give Leia my love. And they're like, give it to her yourself, you freak.
Like, you fucking creep. Just do it.
Han's dead.
Okay.
You're wide open.
Maybe this is a vibe that only Elmer and I got watching the movie. But you know that former Stormtrooper girl, I forget her name. But she, you know, she meets up with Lando after they defeat the Empire and kill Palpatine again. And she's
this time
like
for the last time.
Yeah. For the last time. Question mark. And she talks about how she doesn't know where she comes from. And Lando looks at her. But it feels like he's hitting on her. Like
right,
they revealed.
Let's find out,
they
baby
revealed,
girl.
They revealed afterwards that she's supposed to be Lando's daughter because all black people in Star Wars are related to each other. But they don't reveal it in the movie. That's another like it's revealed in like a visual dictionary or something.
Oh my God.
And like the way they shot that scene was like, dude, it looks like they're just showing how much game Lando still has at like 60 something.
Right. I was into it. I was just like, oh, sure. Yeah, I guess Lando's going to hook up with like
with his daughter.
Yeah, sure. Oh,
he's
God.
About to fucking. So, we're going to get the Star Wars old boy.
Right. Jeez. So there's that. And then the final part is, well, so Rey dies from killing the Emperor because yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Kylo comes and he's like, hey, I saw her heal me once. I'll just do the same thing because that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
He heals her and then he smiles for the first time ever, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then they make out.
And then he dies. Yeah.
Right. And then he disappears.
Yeah. It's like there's no chance.
Right,
no revivals
exactly.
This time.
Although, no revivals.
My brother and I, we were watching. We're like, so this could have just infinitely gone on. Like this could have been like a Romeo Juliet worst case scenario where Kylo dies. Rey dies saving him. He comes back. He dies saving her. They could have just been locked in that like cycle forever. I honestly would have. I would have rather seen that end to the Skywalker saga.
Well, I was just like, yeah, everyone gets redemption, but like, yo, girl, this is like, dude's a war criminal. Like,
yeah, He committed genocide. Like,
yeah.
Like, The Last Jedi was dedicated to showing that this is not his redemption story. Like, he is beyond redemption.
Yeah, they blew up a planet.
Multiple planets. Yeah.
They destroyed the Republic.
Just to make a statement.
Yeah.
And then when Luke is like, you know, he talks, and there's nothing that Kylo really has to, like, motivate him to be redeemed, other than he's horny for Rey. That's it.
Right, which
that's
they never even really say. Yeah. Yeah, because they were pitching this whole, like, Finn is in love with Rey, and then promptly, like, drop it.
Yeah, and,
like,
and then it's like, no, Finn is in love with Rose. And then it's like, no, Finn is in love with the other Black Storm, ex-Stormtrooper that we put in this movie.
Yeah,
now.
They're very much like, hey, nobody in this series is gay, and there's no interracial relationships. Like, that is a statement they clearly make for this movie.
Very much so. And they're like, don't, because Crikey. They want that China money.
They want the China money.
But guess what? It's fucking bombing in China.
Good, yeah.
Rightfully so.
I hope people lose their jobs.
Yeah.
And then the last scene is Rey going to Tatooine and burying the lights, Luke and Leia's lightsabers in the sand, which is hilarious.
The planet, the house that Luke had to witness his fucking caregivers burned to a skeleton on, and Leia was enslaved on, is where they're burying their most prized possessions and living on as a Skywalker legacy. Also, she can just, you can't just take other people's names now. Like, that's not how it works.
There are no space rules.
There are no space rules. Star Wars is a movie about space wizards made for children. I get it.
Yes.
But come on.
Yeah, no, it's the whole point. You choose your family. Who cares? And then she's got a yellow lightsaber.
Oh, yeah.
That she built herself.
So that's blue and green combined. Ooh.
Sure. Yeah. Whoa. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's the whole thing. If you couldn't tell, I don't think Rob and I really enjoyed it at all.
No, especially now, like, this would have been a bad Star Wars movie, but the fact that this one is the end of a 40-year saga makes it that much worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess it is just like the ultimate, like, it's good because nobody's ever going to be like, well, that's it. Like, we can't, like, you wrapped it up too perfectly. We can never make another Star Wars movie.
It's like, no,
again.
I want you to go make a good Star Wars again. Like, don't end on this note.
Yeah, it's like, oh, geez. Well, you can't, you could have done worse than that. So let's try for literally anything else.
Yeah, give me the Rian Johnson trilogy, please.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, set it during the High Republic era.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't fucking wait.
The Mandalorian Wars, anything.
Just get Skywalker the fuck out of here. We're done.
Yeah. So, Rob, I think you're a little bit more versed in Star Wars than I am. What should people turn to for if they want some more Star Wars in their life? What are some other media options for
honestly,
them?
I think that The Mandalorian is pretty good. There's some filler in, like, episodes 4 and 5, but overall, I think it is a solid Star Wars piece of solid Star Wars content. Watch The Clone Wars on Netflix. The Clone Wars series.
It's on Disney Plus now.
Oh, yeah. Watch it on Disney Plus. Fucking great. It's getting a new season on Disney Plus.
Do you need to watch that in order? I hear there's, like, a separate viewing.
So just Google Clone Wars order. It should be, like, the first result. And they made a list of how you should watch The Clone Wars. Because if you watch it just by the seasons they have laid out on streaming, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense and jumps around a shit ton. I don't know why they released it in that order, but there's an easy list to watch The Clone Wars if you're feeling that type of energy.
Yeah.
And then the comic books. Most of the comic books that Marvel's put out for Star Wars are pretty fucking great.
That is fun.
Yeah. I highly recommend the Darth Vader run because that shit is badass.
Hell yeah. And then there's always, you know, the classic video games, Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah.
Classics.
Which is still up in the air whether or not it's canon anymore. But I think some people are arguing that it was confirmed canon because of something that happened in either a comic or, like, a name mentioned in a movie or something. I don't remember.
I think in the visual dictionary, there was some kind of mention of Darth Revan.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, like, okay, the Old Republic is confirmed canon, which is neat.
Yeah. Very cool. So, what are we going to see next week, Rob?
I think we should talk about 1917, the recent Golden Globe Best Picture drama winner.
Hell yeah. I'm so excited to see this, especially after talking about Star Wars so much.
I want to see a good war movie. Give me fuck Star Wars. Give me World Wars.
Yeah. And we're about to enter just the dry January.
It'll be rough, but we'll figure it out. We'll ride these waves together.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking forward to next week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, until next week, boys and girls, you nuts. Don't forget the nuts.
The nuts. The viewing angels, viewing nuts.
Yeah, this has been Viewing Angels, the only movie podcast. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.